Joey Spann is the preacher of the Burnett Chapel Church of Christ in Antioch, where he also lives in Antioch. And for over 30 years, he was a teacher and a coach at Ezel Harding Christian School. He was the softball coach, won 9 state championships and 1 basketball championship. He's the girls' basketball coach there as well, and doesn't coach softball anymore, but he's the girls' basketball coach at Good Pasture now. And really, over the years, he has done a lot of his work in ministry with young people at camps and inner city and all types of things like that. And I appreciate his friendship. And if you were in class this morning, I know you appreciate his ability to present God's word. A couple of years ago, I was at a basketball game that he was coaching. And right before halftime, I saw somebody giving him CPR. And I didn't think he was going to live. And we're thankful to the Lord that he did. And he will talk about some of that, I believe, this morning. But we're thankful for his abilities and his talents and his willingness to be here with us this week. Tonight again at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night. And we encourage you to take responsibility to be here and also to bring someone with you. Brother Spann.
I actually was assistant coach Don Frudenthal over at Ezel Harding for all those years. Some of you may know Don. He was one of the elders at the Scottsboro Church. And I'm helping Lee in softball. Lee doesn't know much, so Lee's won Coach Phillips has won a bunch of championships at Good Pasture also. And been blessed to do that. The game in which I'm literally going to talk about, February 28th, 2011, and I'm going to talk about and share with you what happened that night and lessons that I learned over the 2-week period from the moment that he was talking about for a couple weeks of when recovery time, and obviously a lot more recovery time than that, but I learned some things. You know, you go through some bad things that you wouldn't have picked to have gone through. That morning when I got dressed, I picked my suit out, and I had a 3-piece suit, blue with orange pinstripe. Love that suit. Had a tie with blue and orange. We're going over to play Lipscomb. Now, being at Ezel Harding for 30 years, and Lipscomb being Lipscomb, now I graduated from Lipscomb College, but I developed a good, healthy hatred for Lipscomb as we continued to play each other. Now, healthy hatred in the fact that I had great friendships with the coaches, with the kids. I knew their crowd, a lot of them, more than I knew the Good Pasture crowd. Actually would talk to more on their side than I did when I was at Good Pasture. Obviously knew Ezel's more, 30 years. But in all that relationship, one of the great things about sports is that you can still hate someone. Inside those lines, you know, and I hope you understand I use that word hate a little bit facetiously, but if, I also know how serious Sycamore people take their ball, and so I know you appreciate what I'm talking about. I'm sure you love Cheatham County and some of the other schools around here the same way I loved Lipscomb. We went over to play Lipscomb. Good Pasture, when I went to Good Pasture, I got a call to come to Good Pasture. They asked me, I'd known them for 30 years, and they asked me if I would come over there, and they were having some problems with the basketball program. They hadn't won very much in a few years. And we began to talk, and I ended up taking the job. And they have the same rivalry with Lipscomb, obviously. And so we were playing. And this thing, somebody told me, said, I wish there wasn't so much emotion involved in when we play Lipscomb, and I told them, I said, well, the problem is Every time we play Lipscomb, it's for something. It's for first place. It's for the championship. It means it's not one of those where you're going to throw a picnic lunch out and just, I mean, this game's important. And so we're playing them. The loser goes home. It's in the region. Loser goes home, your season's over. Winner goes on to the state. It's a Friday night, and we're playing bad. I mean, both teams are pretty tight and playing bad. The refereeing's bad. Like I needed to say that. But the reffing, and one of the referees is a friend of mine, song leader at Tusculum. And it's tough to coach a game where a brother's the ref. It's just harder to get on them. We're playing, and he calls a cheap foul on my best player. We have to have her to beat Lipscomb. And he calls in the first quarter a second cheap foul. And so I'm having to pull her out of the game. And I'm talking to Terry. Nothing ugly, but definitely opinionated. And I'm letting him know, you know, that's a horrible call. That's a cheap call. It's a cheap foul. You didn't have to call that. That wasn't even a foul. But I'm saying it a little louder than that. And with a little more emotion, a little more passion, if you will. And I coach that way. But I don't ever curse. I don't curse. I don't use anything like that. I was preaching at Pasco. I was a minister there for 10 years. And one of the refs walked in and sat down. And I said, whew. Unfortunately, he was a friend of mine. But I've had him at other churches where I'd go and preach, and one would go up to me, hey, I had you at such game. And I realized a long time ago, that's what's really important. And so I'm not going to do anything that's going to embarrass this Joey Spann and my father. But I will tell them when they're wrong. So, man, I'm letting him have it pretty good. And half ends, 14 to 12, us. 14 to 12. We go down, if you're at Lipscomb, we go down these steps, down into a dungeon area. Rumors are there's demons down there, I don't know. Go down in there, and we go to our locker room. We have a talk. You got to leave a little bit early at Lipscomb to get up the steps and get out there because of that horn, you know. And so we dismiss, and we break, and we start up, and we hear the horn as we're going up the stairs. And so as a coach, you'll see coaches do this. Go, 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 go. Starters, report in. In case I don't get there because I don't run like they do. Well, we got to the clearing, and the gym was there. The clock had gone off early. I don't know why. We still had a couple minutes to warm up. So I walked on across the court, and I passed Coach Smith, Ernie Smith, and David Carter, and friends of mine. And I said to them, I said, David said, Coach Carter, the assistant said, man, this is an ugly game. And I said, it reminds me of some of the girls I dated in high school. Just a joke. Just a little joke. And we laughed, and I turned, and I walked, and one of the ball boys came by me, a little Lipscomb boy, and I tripped him. I didn't trip him. He came by, and I said something to him, you know. And all of a sudden, if you ever had vertigo, you'll know what I'm talking about. It just flipped. It didn't go like this. It was just momentary. And I was right by the scorer's table, and I put my hand out just not to grab it, but that balancing. And I just touched it, and I remember thinking, what was that about? And that's the last thing I remember. Everything else has been told to me. And in fact, I'll be honest with you, when I've done this, I did this lesson, I've done that a lot of churches have asked me to come and speak and give this. One of the bookstore, Christian bookstores, talk about putting on a DVD and getting out the message on it. But I have been told at other places by people like James, well, I was there. Then they would give me a piece of the information that I didn't realize. When I died, I didn't see a light. I died. I didn't see a light. I'm not sure that's a good thing. But I died, and what took place then was something amazing. And I learned these things in looking back. One of the things was God's providence, the providence of God. If this had happened to me, I had an aneurysm also. They found that when it went in, and they did quadruple bypass, and they got the aneurysm also. And I took for granted that it was God's way of letting him find the aneurysm. I would have appreciated a note on the desk instead, but this was God's way of finding the aneurysm, and I'm okay. And so that's how I reason. You know, we rationalize for God. Abraham did that when he was offering Isaac. He said, I thought I would kill him and God would raise him back up and we would... No, that's not how God had it planned at all. Well, I'm thinking this was to find the aneurysm. Anyways, I died. What happened, they said, that I froze tight and fell straight back. Said the first thing to hit was my head. It wasn't that tailbone hit. It was just the straight back. Said it made a thud throughout the gym. I guess when something hollow hits something else hollow, it thuds. And my wife was watching me walk across the floor. She's a nurse for 35 years. She's just watching me. She always worries about me and stuff, you know. And I come across the floor and she's watching me. And she told me, she said, you just tightened up. And others who have been there told me the same thing. You just straightened up. I spoke this at one of the churches, and one of the ladies said, it was on the Lipscomb side. She said, I told my daughter told me something's not right with him. But I've heard that before, so, you know. But when I hit, and the gym's got a good crowd there, both sides, you know, and God's providence at work. If I'd have done this the week before when we were at Ball State, I wouldn't have pulled through. They probably wouldn't have known where a defibrillator was. At Lipscomb, of all places, you know, to be at, I go down. First of all, God's providence. The horn went off early. If I have this, it's a cardiac arrest. If I had the cardiac arrest downstairs, they wouldn't have gotten, it'd been me and the girls and somebody and just panic. If I would have had the cardiac arrest at the top of those stairs, concrete stairs, and had fallen backwards, it would have killed me. I had it at half court in front of everyone, which was embarrassing. But it's almost as if you get there and say, all right, is everyone ready? They have a defibrillator right over there in their gym. The woman sitting by it's been my friends for 30 plus years, taught at EZL. She grabs it. Four nurses come out of the crowd. Three of them work in the heart unit at different hospitals. None of them worked at the same hospital. Two of them were Lipscomb. Two were Good Pasture. And they came down. A doctor was there. And I'm, again, fortunate we're playing Lipscomb. But this doctor's daughter went to Good Pasture. But now she coaches at Lipscomb. He doesn't even have anyone in the game. He told me later, he said, I don't even know why I came. I just thought I'd go see the game. One of the nurses didn't have anybody in the game. I said, why did you go, Andrea? The girls wanted to go, and I said, okay, let's go. Four nurses were down on me, and the doctor right there, the defibrillator was there. I had two trainers that were there. One of them's in the Hall of Fame, Chris Nottie. And they're all right there. They tell me, and of course, the players were all there and people were there. They tell me that it got totally quiet in the gym. I guess that's accurate. And they said there's literally, no matter where you were in the gym, you could literally hear them talking down there. And you could hear him say things like, you know, he's not breathing anymore, or whatever else it is they said. And my wife just kept saying my name over and over again. And Dr. Pilkington later was talking to me, and he said, "Well, I thought you'd have a black eye." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I slapped you pretty good." And I didn't know that. But he said, "No, I hit you pretty good." And all this was going on in this gym, and people surrounding me. Peggy said that they worked together. She said, "I've seen trauma units not work like they worked. They got the defibrillator on you. They popped you one time, and others had told me this, that your whole body came up, and it brought you back. Just one pop's all I took, but they popped it, and it brought me back." Miss Crocker, one of the nurses from Good Pasture, she told me, she said, "Joey," this is later, she said, "I thought," Coach Spann actually, I thought that the gym had emptied out." She said it was so quiet that when I stood up, when the ambulance came in and they stabilized, and I was already stable when they got there, but they rolled me out. She said when I stood up and turned around, I thought it'd be empty, but it wasn't. No one had left. They were all there, quietly. And this is sad where Coach's mind is. I remember being wheeled out thinking we're ahead, 14-12. If I'm going to heaven, I'm ahead of Lipscomb, 14-12. Taking that with me. When I talked at Lipscomb, I went over and talked to their students, and I told them, I said, "You know, if I have to go, put me ahead of Lipscomb and let me walk out." And Ernie, their coach, I said that whenever I'd see Ernie in heaven, if he makes it to heaven, I'm not sure about Ernie, but you know, hey, Ernie, you know. And I honestly, I remember thinking that. We were ahead. How stupid is that? But that's where men are, I guess, and coaches. I also thought my son came up to me. And I like suits and ties, and so I just always have. My son does too. He's 28 years old. And he's 26 or so then. He came up to me. And he said, he told me this, one of those things I picked up later. He said, "Do you remember what I said to you? No, what you said to me?" I said, no, because I hit morphine pretty quick as we, you know, for the rest of the week or so. And I said, "No, what's the first thing I said to you?" "You said, they cut my suit pants off. I can't wear that suit anymore. They cut the pants." I've got it hanging up for memory in my closet, so when you walk in, you can see it. But they cut the pants off, and I said, "Can they not unsnap? I mean, what? How long would that have taken you to unsnap and pull them down? I don't mind hundreds of people in here, but did you have to cut them? Honestly, how much time did that save us? And why do they have to come off anyways? It's my heart. I mean, but they ruined that suit, and I love that suit. But those are the things that go through your head. Coach Mike McPherson, has Mike ever been here? Any of you ever heard Mike McPherson speak? He does a lot of traveling and speaking stuff. He coaches at Nashville Christian now, was at Lipscomb at that time, their boys coach. Mike and I have been friends for 30 plus years in the ministry, and he was at Ezel, and we're like brothers together. And he'd come to me before the game and said, "Hey, when the game's over," he's really for us, but he can't say that. And he says, "When the game's over, you want to go eat?" And I said, "Sure, we'll go eat." And so we went on in the game. Well, when I died and I'm laying there and they're working on me, Mike is up there and everybody is around. They backed him up, you know, but the crowd is stationary. And they get me back in and they're rolling me off. And McPherson, Mike says to Peggy, when they knew that I was alive, he said, "You tell Joey he owes his life to Lipscomb." He knew what that would do to me. You know, if right before I die and you said, which do you want? I'd say, that's going to be tough. But you owe your life to Lipscomb. As they were wheeling me, as I was laying there, Coach Carter's kids came around him, and he used to be FRA coach and Davidson coach, and we've known each other for so many years. His brother was my assistant. And David was there with his kids, and one of his kids were worried. And he told them, he said, if Joey goes, that's okay. And if he lives, it's okay. I would have preferred him be a little more positive on that, but I understood what he was saying to him. His wife, as they were wheeling me out the door, he told me, tugged at him and said, no, no. She said out loud, just out loud, he ought to be dead. And David said, what? Angel said, she was one of the nurses, his wife, that was working on me. She works at Vandy, and she said he ought to be dead. This shouldn't be happening. She told him over 95% of the people who had what I had died, never come back. 5% who make it to the hospital, only a small percent of them make it. And she said he ought to be dead. I see the providence of God with a woman right by the defibrillator, with the nurses all up there, the doctor there for no reason. Everything, me having it where I had it, when I had it, everything, God's hand all over it. The reason I had it was so strong to me. In the crowd, the crowd all were, they were all in prayer, weren't they, James? And someone told me later, said, I mentioned, one of the things I learned is the power of prayer. That when I died and I went down and died, that people all over the place were praying. And someone said, well, the PA announcer asked if we would pray. And said there were groups of prayers all over the gym, just praying and praying. And Coach Smith, Ernie, was on his knees this far away, praying. And I'm telling you, we were only casual friends until this happened. We had been combatants for 30 years. And well, hey, how you doing? That how you doing, friend? Until this. And he's there praying on his knees. John Temple told me, John was my assistant, and John told me after I said this, he said, Joey, you know, you had another friend standing 6 feet from your head who was praying. He said, I've been to the hospitals. I've seen the look when they die. He said, you had the look. He said, I prayed so hard. All over the gym, these prayers were being uttered in my behalf. My girls were ushered back downstairs to sort of get them away from the situation. The Lipscomb girls went with them. Came into our locker room. Biggest game of the year. Signs in the gym about the other team. All that was gone. And they held hands and they prayed together. When I went out, and people actually started visiting me and telling me, they said the word of what happened spread in today's society, spread like fire. It was on Twitter and Facebook and phones and texting. I had a girl who had played for me, and she was playing for Lipscomb University now, and she was in Georgia that night in a tournament, and got the call from down there, and I was told it just hit everywhere, and it just word went out that I had died. My son asked me, he said, Dad, he knows I believe in the power of prayer. He always traveled with me when I preached. He said, do you think it was prayer that saved you? I said, well, yeah, son, sure. You know, sure. That and four nurses and a doctor and defibrillator, and yeah. And he said, no, I mean, maybe it wasn't God's will at first that you live. Maybe he was going to take you on. Could the prayers have changed that? They were coming up from so many all at once. And I felt like Andy Taylor with Opie in one of those moments, you know, where I said, because I teach that, but I had never really face-to-face met that. And I said, sure, it could be that. Prayers can change things. If I didn't believe it, why do we pray? And all those prayers that were offered up in my behalf, power of prayer, the power of the providence of God, but the power of love. John 13:35, by this all men shall know that you are my disciples, that you have love one for another. What's the greatest commandment? Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, strength. The second is like unto the first. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. 1 John 4:8 says, God is love. One of the things I found in those 2 weeks was the power of love. When they took me to the hospital, it was at Vanderbilt, they took me. And went in, and you know, if you've been in Vanderbilt, that when you walk in the hospital, not the emergency waiting room, but the hospital waiting room is 2 or 3 times or more the size of this auditorium. It's that real big one, and the balconies around the top and stuff. They told me that so many people came, because I've preached a lot of churches and done a lot of youth things and youth minister for 25 years and coaching and all. And they had people coming from all over Nashville. One guy stopped my son. My son wasn't at the game. He got word, and he hurried there. A construction worker stopped him as he was trying to get into the door, and he said, "What's going on over there?" And he just told him, you know, that his dad had just had a heart attack or something. They called it a heart attack at first. But so many people came, and I found this out later, that they had to literally go in and ask it all to leave that thing and go to the cafeteria. And they all went to the cafeteria. Dr. Pilkington said, was telling me later, he said, they did that twice, you know. I said, no, I didn't know that. He said, yeah, they emptied them, and then another group filed in, and they emptied them. And I'm thinking, I had no idea. And so many people, when I got better and started having visitors, they were lined up, and it looked like Peg said Noah's Ark, 2 by 2. They don't let 2 at a time go in. And they have that door there, and you can't go, as in CCU or some one of those. And they couldn't go back there unless the nurse summoned you. Well, the line was so far back that it pushed itself in the thing and down the wall, and the nurses were having trouble walking by. If you've ever been where you weren't supposed to be with a nurse around and her give you that look, she gave that, you know, and finally they pushed them all back out again. One day, a nurse came in, stuck her head in the room, and said, "Who are you?" And I said, you know, because I want my nurse to know, "What do you mean, who am I?" "This is Joey Spann's room." I said, "I'm sorry." She said, "Who are you? Are you a rock star or something?" And I laughed, and I said, no, I coach and I preach and teach, and you know, I'm just blessed. And she would come back and say that over and over again. "Are you sure? Who are you?" And I finally told her, said, "Don't let anyone stay in here more than 5 minutes. But I can't tell them leave, but you come in." And she'd come in and told them to leave. But the group she came in on were some of my ball players. I didn't want them to leave. But she ran them on out too. Andy Conley. Do you know Andy? Has he ever spoken here? Andy won't shut up. Don't call Andy. Back when the cell phones first came out, nobody called Andy on a cell phone. He ate your minutes up. Andy helped me coach on the team we won the state of Diesel. I get a call 6-7 months later. "Hey, Joey, how you doing? Da, 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 da. Well, you going to be here this week?" I said, "Beware. You might not remember. When you were in the hospital, I came and visited you, and I was on morphine. He invited me to speak at his church. And he said, "You said yes." Well, fortunately, I worked it out where I could get out there. But had so many people come through, and cards and letters, boxes of cards and letters. The thing that really was amazing to me is that was Friday night. Saturday, I had the surgery. Sunday, my girls had to go back and play Lipscomb anyways because of the state tournament. You had to be through by Monday. So they went back over there to finish that up. And they stopped by the room. And I do remember this. Macy, the sweetest little girl, she'd been over my bed. And she said, "Coach Ben, we're going to go play Lipscomb Day. And we're dedicating the game to you. We're going to beat them." And I said, "Come here, sweetheart." And she'd been over, and I said, "Honey, I just died. I don't care about a stupid ball game." I did. I told her, "So what? Go have fun. Good luck." You know, and they went and they lost. And I told Ernie at Lipscomb, "What kind of Christian is that would do that to a group of kids whose coach just died in front of them? Do you not give that game?" But no, not Lipscomb. And you know, I had a lot of fun at with them on that. One of the good things is they came back, my girls came back and brought me, you know, that paper that you roll out and make bulletin board signs and stuff. Cheerleaders used to make their big things. They had like Mustangs eat cougar meat, real intelligence statements like that all over the gym. They had taken all that down and had replaced it with signs like "We love Coach Spann." All around, "Our prayers are with Coach Spann." I still have that sign. They put my name on the defibrillator. I told Ernie, "My name's in your gym. Yours isn't." But that love in which they show, you know, sometimes we forget it, especially in athletic contests. But I appreciated it so much. We went to a council meeting. The counselor, a friend of mine, he called me up and he said, "We're wanting to dedicate something." I said, "For what? What?" "City council just wants to recognize you." I said, "For dying? I died." "No, we want you to come, and Lipscomb's going to be there." And so I came, and I'm standing by Coach Roller and a couple of other, and the nurses and the doctors, and we're all in there. And the Dr. Pilkington's going around saying, TV cameras are there, crowds there, ready to argue about stuff. The council's there. And Pilkington's going around saying, "He's a miracle. This guy's here is a miracle. He ought to be dead. He's a miracle." And I'm saying, "Hey." And so I'm waiting there, and Charlie Tiger, I said, "What?" He said, "Don't worry about it. We're just going to read the proclamation." They read this proclamation. It, honest to goodness, it says, "We want to, on such and such date, Coach Joey Spann, cardiac arrest, and Lipscomb, and because of that, we want to honor Lipscomb." I said, "What? I'm here honoring Lipscomb?" And Roller's beside, Mike's beside me. He's their AD. And they say it about five or six times in the reading. And I turn to Mike and I say, "Hey, anything I can do to honor y'all, let me know. You need me to die, call me. Anything to bring Lipscomb to Lipscomb's honor, I'll do." And he laughed and stuff. And I told him, I said, "You know, we'll never have a rivalry, will we?" And he said, we got serious. He said, "Well, not as long as you're coaching. Because there for just a little bit, we were one." In that moment, all had joined and realized, really, we're one. I went to Good Pastor 2 weeks later, and the lady said to me, and this is in closing to you, the TV cameras were there, and I talked to the student body, and Channel 2 was there, and Channel 4 was there, and they interviewed me afterwards. And every church I went to, they said, "You know, we were praying for you. We were praying for you." I went to my first summer camp. I went to summer camp that year with my ball team, getting ready to start a game. Here we go, boy. I'm ready to roll. I've been cooped in, and here we go. And the referee comes over, and he's walking toward me. And I don't know him, but he's coming toward me. And so I do that little step toward him, take my hand out, you know, and just that pregame, and he grabs my hand, and he said, "Man, glad you made it. We were praying for you." And he grabbed me with the other hand. I said, "Well, thank you very much. I'm just going to be one of the thank you." But he won't let go. He just held it. And I could tell he had, he was in the real world, not the athletic world. And he just held my hand. And he said, "We prayed hard for you. Glad you're here, Coach." And I'm standing there. John Temple's right behind me. And I turn around to John. I said, "Now, how am I going to coach now? What can I say to that guy? You know, him? He prayed that I would live, and I'm going to say you missed a three-second call? Are you kidding? This guy, I can't say a thing to." The TV woman interviewing me afterwards said, she's down below the camera, and the camera's here, and she's asking me off camera, and I'm there, and she says, "Do you realize that 95%+ of people die and of that, and only a certain," she gave me the same percentages that Angel had already said, and I said, "Yeah, I realize that." She said, "How does it feel to be one of the special ones to have made it?" And I told her, I said, "You won't put this on TV, but I've always been one of the special ones. I'm a Christian. My God has always looked down on me." So when you ask me, how does it feel to be one of the special ones, really all I know. And she did put this on there. They didn't put that on. She did put this. I preached about a lot of times about God touching one's life. But it's a pretty, and these are my words then, it was a pretty neat thing to actually feel the hand of God touch you like that. I ask you this morning at the close of this lesson really is a personal type thing, but I ask you this question. The rest of the lessons this week won't be like this, but I just ask you just what that nurse asked me one time. Who are you? Who are you? Are you one of the special ones who God watches over, who the blood of His Son cleanses from sins, who when you speak, this is awesome, when you speak, God listens? Is that you? We're going to sing an invitation song. If someone here is outside of Christ, we ask you to respond to this call, and we'll talk with you down front, and we'll meet your needs. If we can help you in any way, won't you come right now, please?